Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic level it's supposed to be.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Ethics Experts. I'm your host, Giovanni Gallo, and I'm super excited to introduce you to and feature Rebecca Barnes-Hogg. She is the chief consultant and the leader and founder of YOLO Insights. You can find her company at YOLOinsights.com and check out her book, The YOLO Principle, The Ultimate Hiring Guide for Small Business. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Hi, thanks. I'm glad to be here. It's a beautiful sunny day, so that's nice, and especially in these chaotic times.
Yeah, we got to take what we can. Take whatever wins we have, right?
Right, exactly.
So the way we love starting off is starting with your personal story. We're going to get into some things today, talking about hiring and how you can build a good culture by getting the right people into a company. And I know that, you know, you help people kind of find the right insights in that process. But before we get into, you know, that great advice that you have for us in this fresh approach to hiring top talent, talk to us a little bit about yourself and how you came to this career and, you know, how you came to be doing the stuff that you love.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I started out probably way back in high school. I was always the person people came to for advice on, you know, how do I get a summer job or an after school kind of position. So I was always helping my friends figure out where they could get jobs they would like. And then as I graduated from high school and went to college and all that and had a number of different jobs, I always ended up getting frustrated because it always seemed like I worked with really great people, but they were just never, you know, the right people in the right jobs. And that always frustrated me, both, you know, from a coworker perspective, but also from a, you know, I always saw that business side of it where I was looking at all of these companies that are spending a lot of time and money bringing good people into the organization, but they ultimately didn't work out and they left or ended up worse being fired because they just didn't fit well. And so I decided that my career really needed to focus on the human resources aspect of that. I went back to school, got a master's degree in human resources, and then, you know, worked in HR for probably 20, 25 years in a corporate setting. And a lot of my focus, and from HR, the people who are in HR, and even compliance related issues that would land on my desk as a senior leader in HR, really, you could trace back to having the wrong people in the job from the very beginning. And so probably the last half of my career, I really focused in on, you know, let's get it right on the front end and alleviate the pain and the issues that arise on the back end when you don't get it right. And when I left corporate America, that's about 10 years or so ago, I decided to start YOLO Insights, and that was my primary focus because that was the area I loved most about HR, was really getting the right people in the right jobs within organizations so that they would be more efficient, more effective, and ultimately more profitable because, you know, that's really why businesses are in business, right? Make a profit.
Sure. That's awesome. I love that perspective. And, you know, I think so many of us, when we find our passion, it comes from kind of a pain point that we have, that we've experienced something and we say, hey, you know what, this probably could be done better. And I love that you've identified that and built your career around solving that issue. It's something that, you know, we at Compliance Line and I personally care about. You know, we say here that most people spend most of their waking hours for most years of their life at work. And for there not to be a good fit for that, it's not only a drag on business profitability and efficiency and all the metrics that they look at, but, you know, it leaves the people, the employees, it leaves them in a tough spot, kind of suffering through something that maybe they don't have to. So it's great that you contribute to helping that.
Yeah, that falls into the name of my business, YOLO, you only live once. And like, life's too short to suffer through the wrong people in the wrong positions. And, you know, I always felt like work should be fun. People should enjoy what they do, because I really believe people don't wake up in the morning saying, I want to go to work and make everybody around me miserable today. I just really, at the core of us, you know, maybe there are a few crazy people out there like that, but I really feel like
some curmudgeons who are actually trying to do that.
I actually have probably run across a few like that in my career, but I really believe that, you know, the vast majority of people are not waking up in the mornings thinking, how can I make everyone miserable today?
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a little bit. So what, if someone's making people miserable at work, how does that usually happen, and what can we keep an eye on to change that?
Yeah, well, I think part of it goes back to, I spent a lot of time in my work working with hiring managers on interviewing techniques. So it's really around asking the right questions when you interview people to really make sure they're going to enjoy the job they're doing. So one of the things I like to do is ask someone, you know, in your current role, what is the thing you least like to do? And if they tell me that the thing they least like to do is going to be 90% of the job I have for them, then I know it's not going to be a fit. And so then I can have that conversation with them and say, well, you know, you just told me that the thing you don't like most is working with pivot tables or charts and graphs or doing data visualization within Excel. And unfortunately, that's going to be 90% of this job. So I don't think it's a good fit for you. Would you agree with that? And they're always going to say, yes, thank you for being that honest with me.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to waste anyone's time. And, you know, it's an investment on both sides. And so I like to be as open and transparent about what the job actually is and let people self-select out if it's not what they want.
Okay. What if someone runs into that and someone says, oh yeah, well, I don't like that here, but it's just because I have a bad computer, like I'd be fine doing it. And they say, you know, actually I would like to do that in this role.
Then I think you really need to dig deeper and say, okay, so what kind of computer would be better? Because Excel is Excel, no matter what computer you're working on, right?
Yes, even on a Mac.
You know, the program's the program. So,
right.
You know, I would delve into, why is the computer going to make a difference? What are your thoughts on that? And then just really keep digging until you get them to either admit that, you know, I'm just desperate for a job and need the money, or, you know, they really do have a legitimate reason for why they don't like that in their current job, and that reason will not exist in your organization.
Yeah, that's a great point. You got to kind of dig in on that, and maybe sometimes there's a reason, but if you spend some time on it, you might figure it out, huh?
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, ethics experts are, you know, we're leaders, we're running our own teams, we're building a team out as our company grows, and as senior leadership understands more and more how important a culture of integrity and ethics is at a company. How can you give us some advice as, you know, as a division scales and as we go from 2 to 5 to 20 people on our team, how maybe a hiring process needs to change, or the way that we think about kind of building that team out may be different from what made us successful before?
Sure. I think every time you add someone new to the team, it's going to change the dynamic somewhat. So okay. I think on the front end, you need to really identify, you know, what are your core values? What's important to you? What qualities are important in your team? And it's more than just making sure, you know, all people are the same, because you want some diversity in there, not just of, you know, people themselves, but of backgrounds, of thoughts, you know, different degrees or programs, people who come from different geographic areas. You need a lot of diversity on your team. You don't want everyone being alike.
Yeah, so, a lot of those different dimensions, right? It's not
right.
Diversity is not just about race and gender.
Right. You know, you want single people, you want married people, you want people with kids, you want, you know, because you bring your life to work with you. And so, and your clients are not all the same either. You know, your clients are, you know, all demographics, all, you know, income ranges, you name it. Like, diversity is very, very wide. So,
yes.
You want to make sure that you don't limit your diversity by having everyone the same, but you do want to look at the qualities. So, you know, what qualities are important in your team? So for some organizations, they could be pretty standard. Others, you know, they might be a little bit different. You know, so one of my core values in my organization is that we have fun doing our work. And so we identify what that fun means. It doesn't mean we're not doing our work. It means, you know, we can, you know, have a little humor in the day, take breaks that are, do something fun, do, you know, team building kind of things. But at the core of our work, we want people to enjoy what they do. So when I talk to people that I bring on, whether it's a freelancer, part-time, or whatever, I always ask them, you know, what do they consider fun? And it doesn't seem like a typical interview question, but if their idea of fun is so radically different from the rest of the team, that if we're going to be, you know, as, you know, team building and bonding type activities, if we're going to be doing something that they're absolutely going to hate, they're never going to participate in those activities. So I want to know that up front. And so it may be something that I can incorporate into it, but maybe it's something that just really isn't going to work. But knowing that at the front end is good. So you want to not only identify the core values, but also define them. Like, what does it mean in your organization? Because fun to me is different from fun to other people. And you want to really hone in on those definitions. And then you design your questions and your interview around those to identify your cultural fit. And then, you know, you never want to forget about the technical competency. So you want to make sure people can technically do the job, but you also want to make sure they share the same values, that they're aligned with the mission of your organization, those types of things.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you're talking about fun, because a couple reasons. There's a personal reason. You know, we say here that if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. And that doesn't mean that you can only have fun if you, you know, work the sidelines at a basketball game or something like that. You know, we can be doing important work that matters and maybe and even has, you know, serious impact, but enjoy what we're doing. And I think part of the point you're making, Rebecca, is that we do that by getting people who see what we do and how we do it as fun, and they enjoy that.
Right.
You know, when I came to Compliance Line, the company had a strong history, had a great, you know, a great background, and had been really run exceptionally by our founders, Brian and Steve. And when my brother and I came in, then, you know, we realized that what we needed to do is make sure that we didn't mess up what had made this company great so far. And we went through this process to get, you know, get people in to, you know, help them or help us understand what had gotten us here and make sure that we didn't, you know, kind of let any of that. The top 10 values that we did through this process was fun. So we define that as we laugh, we make each other happy, we get a little weird, and that's okay because we choose the positive outlook and believe that our attitudes make the difference. So here
that.
At Compliance Line, oh, thank you. Yeah, it was definitely a labor of love from a bunch of people to kind of figure out, you know, well, what do you mean when you say that? And, you know, oh, well, I mean having a good time or whatever. But we tried to boil it down to that because, you know, we deal with serious issues here, right? People are reporting misbehavior to us, or we're helping someone, you know, be less stressed in their job as an ethics leader by getting this work done and kind of driving them toward insights instead of just kind of doing reporting or whatever it is. So, you know, it's important that we do our job right, to your point. It doesn't mean that we're not working, but we can choose that positive outlook and enjoy, you know, each other's company as we get an important job done.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I like that.
So I really like that you pushed on, you know, getting those values defined. And I think that sometimes people tend to fall on either side of that balance of the technical skills and the values and the fit. Talk to us a little bit about how, you know, as an ethics expert, we're hiring someone on our team. We maybe have a scope if they need this this certification or this background. How do we balance kind of making sure that they have the technical skills that they're also going to be a fit?
Yeah. Well, one of the important things to remember, and especially now, you know, it's kind of a crazy time for hiring. And, you know, even before COVID and the pandemic, it was pretty much full employment. So, you know, a lot of what I would work with my clients on is, you know, you can't find the perfect person anymore. They're very difficult to find. So you have to decide up front what is a must have and what's a nice to have. So for me, the must haves always are around the culture. And you can always train someone who is very bright, smart, intelligent, you know, has intellectual curiosity, a thirst for learning. Those people are very trainable. So I think for many companies now, your decision is, you know, where can I train and where do I already need this expertise? Because there's a cost involved in having a position empty while you search for that perfect person that's both a cultural fit and a technical fit.
Okay.
Versus bringing someone in who's a great cultural fit and maybe a 75% technical fit where you train the other 25%. And you can bring that person up to speed in a few months as opposed to having that position open for 3, 6, 8 months or however long it might be while you train them on the things that they lack. So if they need a particular certification, technology hiring is really, you know, going gangbusters right now. So if you need a certification, they don't have it, can you hire that person without it? With the caveat that in 90 days, they'll earn the certification, those kinds of things. And that helps a lot with filling your open positions, getting the right cultural fit, the right people on your team, but yet not sacrificing those skills that you need in the process.
Yeah, that's really important. Yeah, I love that balance and that, you know, I think it's hard when you have an open position and you need it. And, you know, it's maybe hard to anticipate this stuff ahead of time or somebody leaves. You say, all right, well, we got to get somebody in that role. Well, if you get the wrong person in that role, you're going to kind of spend a lot more time and money, you know, kind of trying to get that right than spending the extra time making sure you find the right person. But I like that you give us this perspective that if you hire for the must-haves, the cultural fit, the motivation, the fit with the job, you can kind of backfill some of that technical stuff or some of those capabilities during onboarding or the first 90 days.
Right, right. Yeah, and I could spend hours just giving you all the heartbreaking stories of people who hired for the technical skill, ignored the cultural fit, and then later, you know, just regretted it. You know, I know one small business owner who ignored my advice as a recruiter that, you know, the cultural fit wasn't there. I was really 90% sure that the technical capabilities weren't up to what they needed, but they were desperate to fill the position, put a body in the chair, and it came very close to bankrupting the company. And that's the kind of thing that just is heartbreaking. And my mission is when I work with my clients is, you know, you're paying me for my knowledge and my expertise, and I'm not going to let that happen to you.
That's tragic that happened, but it's good that you were around to maybe help them right size it. I think you said almost, not that it actually bankrupted the company.
We caught it in time, so that
caught
was a
good just in time. So I'd love to expand a little bit and talk about you know, the issues that ethics experts are trying to solve. And these are, you know, we talk about getting a healthy organization is just like getting a healthy organism, like a human body. You got to get the sickness out and get the misbehavior out of the company. And then you also got to drive health and you got to, you know, take your vitamins and make sure people are engaged and all that kind of stuff. On that kind of getting the sickness out piece, what are some things that you either see go wrong in the hiring process or people can do better to make sure that once someone gets here, they're not going to fall into some bad behavior? You know, listen, like we can do background checks and find out if someone, you know, has been in jail for something. But a lot of the things that end up happening that are unethical are kind of this slow slide into something or someone kind of trying to get away with it or thinking it's not that big of a deal. How can we infuse some things into our hiring process so that our whole organization, even outside of our ethics team, care about, you know, the integrity that's always on everyone's values wall and stuff like that?
Yeah, so integrity is one of those things that it's kind of hard to know whether someone has it just from conversations. But there are a couple of ways you can ask questions. And one of the things that I counsel the people I work with is to not lead people to the answer they want to hear. So when you're asking questions, there's some psychological things that you can do to trigger people into telling you the truth instead of those answers they find on the internet, you know, because everybody researches the best way to answer the question about, you know, whatever X, Y, Z is.
Greatest weakness. No one says my greatest weakness is I lie in interviews all the time.
Right, right. So one of the things that I do is it's a quick little trick, but I always start my questions with the phrase, could you tell me? Now, that's kind of a yes or no question. When I say, could you tell me? You could say, yes, I can, or no, I can't. But if you phrase your questions that way, no one in an interview is going to say no. They're going to answer the question. So you can say, could you tell me about a situation where you had to make a difficult decision? Okay, so it's pretty wide open. And it doesn't say, you know, where you made the right decision in a difficult situation. You're just leaving it very open. And when you do that, people tell you the most amazing things. They get thrown off guard and they just start talking. So I had asked that question of someone in an interview once, and they started telling me about how, you know, they were working with someone and they didn't like this person. And then they accused them of all different sorts of behaviors. And the more they talked, the more it became clear to me that this person was the problem and not the coworker, right? But if I had phrased that to be, tell me about a time when you had to make the right decision in a difficult circumstance, I never would have gotten that information. So it really, you know, you have to really think about your questions, and you really have to kind of analyze. It's almost like the people who design the surveys and those questionnaires, you know, you want to get good, clean data. You don't want it skewed by anything in particular. So you really want to, you know, be conscious of the words you use, because words have meaning. And we talked about that earlier when we were defining our culture, right? So, you know, if you ask that question about the difficult decision, you might say, well, I'm not sure, you know, candidates sometimes will say, I'm not really quite sure what you're asking. And I was like, well, you know, we make decisions every day, all day long. So at some point in your life, you had a decision that was difficult, and it could be personal, it could have been at school, it could have been in a business environment. You choose the difficult situation and tell me about it. And sometimes they pull things, you know, from, you know, way back in their childhood, or, you know, it's just, it's very interesting as a kind of a student of human behavior, the depth of things that you learn about people when you know how to ask the right questions is just truly amazing. And you really get to the heart of who people are when you ask questions in that way.
Yeah, and you make a great point that if you just kind of give them some room to talk, they're gonna tell you something. And, you know, I think there's a balance that we have to strike as we're adding people to our team, because you want it to be structured, and you don't want to be discriminating against people because you're only asking certain people certain questions. But you can have a structured way of asking open-ended questions that ultimately gets to a place where someone can just talk and say, oh, well, when you say tough decision, I think of this type of thing. And they can tell you a lot about themselves, even if it's not the thing that they're telling you about.
Right. And then also opens up to the door to, you know, how do they think about things? You know, what do they do to analyze a problem? Who do they go to for help? You know, they might tell you, like, I really didn't know what to do. So, you know, I did research. I talked to people who had been through the situation before. And, you know, so things like that also give you clues about who this person is and how they'll operate and the way they think and the way they analyze problems. And, you know, you really don't want to hire that person who's going to come to you as their manager and dump every single little issue in your lap for you to take care of. Sure. So that one question can just really open up the door to a wealth of information.
Cool. Yeah, I really like that. I'm gonna have to hold on to that. Could you tell me? And you know, see how they interpret it. I'll be using that one. If you're about to interview with me, keep an eye out for it. getting back to that kind of healthy organization, healthy organism illustration, a lot of times as ethics experts, we're, you know, primarily, like, at least as a first step, you got to kind of get the sickness out. You got to make sure misbehavior isn't happening. We do that a lot of different ways. I imagine there are some things that you advise people around in the hiring process to kind of prevent further problems that we as integrity experts and ethics leaders end up kind of dealing with if someone doesn't hire someone well. So what are some of those things that you might advise someone to look out for and to avoid in that interview process that we probably deal with all the time because someone didn't do that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of times the issues that ended up on my desk and kind of, you know, from a compliance avenue or even ethical type things really surround kind of what I would call ingrained behaviors. So when you're looking at hiring people, you really want to look at those past behaviors, what they've done in the past. So I'm trying to think of a good example. This actually happened recently. We were hiring someone for, it was an office manager position, but they would also be doing some bookkeeping and accounting, managing the petty cash and that sort of thing. And when we went through the process, there were a couple of red flags that came up. The first was a long gap in the resume. And the person said, oh, I took some time off. I was dealing with some family issues and that sort of thing. And that's, you know, normal, people do that. And then we're like, well, you know, what were you doing, you know, when you're taking care of a family issue, you know, did you do anything else? Did you continue your learning? This family issue consumed all of my time. And so there were red flags there. We weren't really sure if we wanted to proceed. But then we got to the background screening, which I think is incredibly important because, like you said, people don't always tell the truth.
Right.
And we ran the background screen and found out that this person had been actually serving time in a felony charge in prison for embezzlement from her prior organization. So, you know, someone who's going to be handling money, we needed to know that ahead of time. And what happened there that I would advise most people to do is make sure you're using an employment application. This particular company felt it was not necessary. It was an extra step. They already had the resume, they had references. But on that application, you can ask about convictions for those types of things.
Okay.
And there are some, and I have to caution you because there's some jurisdictions that now have the ban the box where you can't ask that question until after you've made an offer of employment and that sort of thing. So be a little careful with that one. And as compliance experts, you're probably well versed on those state and local laws more so than I would be.
But it's a worthwhile caveat. Yeah, we got to be careful of
yes,
that.
Yes. So definitely make sure that you're checking that box in terms of, you know, because right there, if someone's going to lie on their employment application and you catch it, you have found that out before you've actually hired them. And that's important. You know, you don't want to go through that whole investment of bringing them on, training them, getting them on the team, setting up their benefits and all of that, only to have to let them go because those costs, you never can recoup those.
Sure.
So that's one thing to do. Just make sure you have a solid application reviewed by an employment attorney and that sort of thing. And just when you structure your interview, make sure, like you alluded to, you know, you're asking all the candidates the same questions, but you're leaving plenty of room to have follow-up questions and dig deeper into those answers when you're interviewing your candidates. So I think those two things would be my top two tips to put in play with your recruiting process to just make sure that you're filtering out those people before they ever walk through your doors.
Yeah, that's great advice. There's a potential to catch some of that stuff up front. And to your point, there's some things that you maybe wouldn't fault someone for not disclosing voluntarily, but if you ask for them directly, then you have a binary, were they honest about it or not?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So in addition to the hiring that we're talking about, you do some work, Rebecca, on engaging employees and keeping people satisfied. And I think that as we move in, you know, we talk about this dynamic of moving from compliance 2.0, that's just kind of do some things and have some processes and be efficient, to the 3.0 is really about being effective and engaging employees and actually caring about people, not just the ones that sue you, but all of the people who work at your company.
Right.
So talk to me about some of the things that you focus on when you're talking about, you know, engaging employees and helping them really live a strong life at work beyond the hiring process.
Yeah, one of the things that I do is I work a lot directly with the hiring managers, because if you look at all the research, people typically don't leave jobs, they leave managers. Yep. So I like to work with the managers and really help them be better communicators with their team. And when you look at reasons people leave jobs and, you know, what they consider to be a bad manager, communication and feedback are the two things you hear most frequently. So a lot of times I think we live in this society where, you know, we have to watch every word we say. We're worried about being, you know, appropriate and not offending people. And I think sometimes that makes us a little afraid almost to talk to people. But I think if you come from a place of, I want to learn and I want to understand, when you ask questions and talk to your staff, most of your staff is going to really appreciate that openness, that transparentness, that honesty. So you might want to find out, you know, if you notice someone who is, you know, has been a great performer, and then suddenly you notice things aren't so great anymore, just have that conversation with them. Just say, you know, hey, you know, I noticed, you know, you're not performing the way you used to. You know, what's going on? It's not like you. I want to help, you know, whatever's going on in your life, I want to help you through it so that I can, you know, make sure you're doing a great job and continuing to contribute. And so when you approach
crazy,
it
just
from
actually
that,
caring about them and talking to them. Imagine how that might work.
I know, right? So I think, you know, if you approach it from that way, and I think most of us tend to go the opposite direction. It's like, it's about discipline instead of prevention. So the earlier you address a situation and you address it from that place of, I want to learn what's going on, I want to help you through it, the better it's going to be and the more engaged your team is. Yeah. And then right now, I think the biggest thing for most employees is fear. They're afraid, because they're afraid of not only, you know, the virus and what it means to them, but what it also means to their job, their companies. You know, what is work going to look like in the future? Are we ever going to be able to get back in the office? There are some people who truly are missing that in-person interaction, and they're not doing well, you know, when they're not in an office, in an office environment. You know, they don't do well when they don't have the structure of, I get up and I go to work every day and I interact with people in an office and then I come home. And now you're trying to work from home and do that remotely, and you can't walk next door to your coworker's desk or cubicle or office and talk to them. You know, you have to use another method, and it doesn't feel as personal. So just really understanding who those people are who need that extra touch, that extra communication, doing a couple of quick video check-ins with them, not just using email or phone, but actually jumping on a Zoom or a Microsoft Team or a Skype call with them, just so you can see and interact with people. You know, there are a lot of different things you can be doing to keep people feeling part of the team. And I think the other thing I would recommend right now, especially in this crazy time, is to just be honest with them about what's going on in the organization. One of my small business clients was faced with the decision of, you know, I can close the doors entirely, or I can cut a few staff members, or, you know, thinking about, you know, what about a pay cut or different things like that. And I think if you just go to them and just saying, you know, we're struggling financially, we want to protect everyone to the extent we can, share some ideas with us. How do you, you know, how do you see us going through this process? What ideas do you have? And you might find that your employees have some great ideas about new ways to do business that would bring in more revenue and keep your doors open. So you wouldn't have to think about layoffs. So I think just being honest with people, engaging them in the process, letting them know what's going on. I mean, you don't have to tell them the whole financial picture. But you do have some leeway there in asking for ideas of, you know, this is crazy time. What do you think we can do to, you know, change the way we do business, or to serve new customers, or offer a new product or a new service?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to try to be flexible. And I mean, that transparency is a big thing. You know, there's a certain type of fear about the unknown. I don't know what's in the closet. There's another type of fear that's more anticipation about, okay, it's going to be one of these two things in the next month. And if you can take that kind of unknown fear away and say, hey, here's what we're looking at, here are the trade-offs and stuff like that, it's really a great way to serve your team, and, you know, get people to understand what's going on so that they can focus on what matters instead of wondering about the 45 other things that they might worry about, but maybe don't matter.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. And with this particular business, it ended up that one of her team members was like, I didn't want to quit in the middle of this, but I've really been wanting to do this thing, on my own. It's been kind of a passion project. And,
Okay.
I'll raise my hand and say, I can leave voluntarily because I really want to go pursue this other interest. And right there, she saved a salary that allowed her to keep her other staff. But if she had not had that conversation, that person was thinking, I need to stay here because I can't leave this boss that I love in a lurch during a crazy time.
Yeah.
So you just never know what's going on with people. But if you're open enough and you just open that door for them to tell you, it's amazing sometimes what you get back from your team and the support that you get. Because if you've done your job right, your team wants to support you. And the payback for that support is that you be as transparent and open and honest as you can possibly be with them.
Yeah, I mean, imagine in that situation if they had laid somebody off who wanted to be there, and then the person who wanted to go pursue that personal project was like, hey, I would have done that.
Right. Yeah. So,
That's bad.
just by having that conversation with her team, she alleviated even more stress.
Yeah, that's great. I'd love to just kind of get any parting words that you have for our team. Anything that we haven't covered, or anything kind of call to action or inspiration that you can give us that we can actually make a difference by paying a little bit more attention to this issue about hiring that you spend so much time helping people with.
Yeah, well, I did write a book, so I would recommend, I'll be a little self-serving here,
Oh
that
yeah, I was gonna pump that. Hey everyone, you should check out YOLO Insights. Check out the YOLO Principle, because you really do only live once. And
right.
yeah, we should definitely we're definitely gonna get there. So tell us more about the book and anything else you wanted to.
Yeah, sure. And and I made the book fun because I told you at the beginning, fun is a core value.
It's gotta be part of it, yeah.
And so there are these really interesting, people call it poetry, but I call it really bad rhymes. Because one thing I found is when you make things fun for people, they remember them. So when I was, corporate HR, people either loved the HR department or they hated it. But for me, I would always, it was always, you have to be the enforcer at times. And when you did that, I tried to make it fun and lighthearted, even though it was a serious thing. So when someone was late with a performance review, I'd send them a, I used to call them my nag emails, but they were fun because they had these little rhymes in them that, made people laugh and they're like, yes, I know I need to do it. Okay, I'll get it done. But if I had just kind of like, oh, you need to do this done now, you're late. You're violating company policy, blah, blah, blah. People wouldn't have done it. They would have continued to ignore it.
Right.
So the book is filled with these little rhymes that make it fun and easy because, not everyone wakes up and says like, oh, yay, I get to go hire people today. I just love hiring. So I've made it fun and a little bit lighthearted, even though it is a serious subject. And it's really a roadmap. It walks you through that. So gives you a lot to think about. It's kind of a preliminary thing. But there's a chapter in the book on interviewing, and I think my biggest recommendation for people who are doing the hiring and want to get the right people from the very beginning is to really spend time identifying the core values and then designing your interview questions around those core values and the cultural fit in your organization, and then adding in your technical experience level type questions after that. So I think that's the biggest nugget I can leave people with.
That's great. I love that. We say here that we're always going to be a values forward company, because values touch people's hearts a lot more than, metrics and our quarterly plan and stuff like that. And it's also a way that we can align around the mission that we have to make the world a better workplace. If people believe in that, they can pick up the technical stuff, and they can pick up
Right.
the, okay, how do I use this different ticketing system or whatever it is? And I love the push on values, and you've seen it through your career or through all of the advising that you've done, that it really makes a difference. I think it's something that people tend to. You said that a lot of people may not wake up and say, oh, I can't wait to do hiring. I think at least part of that is it seems like it's kind of hard to get it right. And it's so disappointing when you have to go through it again. And it's hard to really make an objective or high confidence decision. But you've done a great job, Rebecca, giving us some tips and some insights on how that can be less of an opaque and less of a scary process. And also, I just think it bears repeating because we all can get better at it. If you hire someone who fits the job and fits your culture, then there are a lot of other things that they can get up to speed on and get onboarded with. And if that fit isn't there, then, you know, all the technical skills in the world are not going to keep someone engaged. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the kind of onboarding tricks and, you know, laying out a presentation for your policy and all of that, they're not going to make a difference for someone who doesn't fit in that job. And I really appreciate the way that you've helped us as ethics experts on our own team. And then also as people who, you know, have a contribution to HR and to the culture writ large, can help drive this forward so that more people get into the right job and they can really contribute in a positive way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's what I love doing. There's for me, nothing is more fun than when I make that connection between some amazingly talented person and an organization who just desperately needed their talent. So that's what wakes me up in the morning and keeps me excited about what I do every day.
That's great. Well, it's great that you found a job that you fit in, that you're engaged in. And I think that as we move forward as leaders, that's always going to be a big part of the equation to make sure that the people we bring onto our team and the people we bring into our company have that fit. They have a manager that cares about them and can help them through any tough times. And we can build that transparency and hopefully have some fun while we're doing it.
Right. Exactly. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. This has been Rebecca Barnes-Hogg, the CEO and Chief Consultant at YOLO Insights. Check her out at yoloinsights.com. And you can find her book, YOLO Principle, The Ultimate Hiring Guide for Small Business, wherever books are sold. Rebecca, thanks so much for being with us and sharing some of your expertise to make us better ethics experts.
Thank you. It's been a great time. Have a great day, everyone.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining. This has been The Ethics Experts. We'll catch you on the next show.